My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
As always, you can listen on 92.9 FM, 680 AM. You can also keep up to date on the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen. It's the best way to keep up with all the content here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Dennis Fuller is back in studio. He's producing the program. My company this week is, of course, my partner in crime on Tuesdays and Fridays. It's a football Friday. He's the host of VSiN Primetime. He's also host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast. College football tailgate starting 9 a.m. tomorrow. VSiN, YouTube TV, on Twitter, on X, at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
How are you doing, man? Whereabouts and where in the world is Jeffrey Wright today?
So I am eastbound and down. I am eastbound on, it's a little loop that goes underneath Nashville, so I'm on 840. It's eventually going to dump me off on I-24, and I'm headed to Chattanooga. So I, of course, the audience knows I'm the play-by-play announcer for my alma mater, MUS, and we're going to play the defending state champion and the Macaulay school. And let's just say we're bigger underdogs than probably NIU was last week.
Oh, still too soon. Too soon, but all right. The all-boys boarding and day school in Chattanooga, is that right?
Correct. This is a battle of the boys' schools.
Nice.
After we had a battle of the boys' schools last week, we played the boys' school from Nashville. They popped us 31-0. We had 82 yards of offense. We're going to play a team that's significantly better.
You got your blowout material ready to go?
So, that's the other thing. I thought this was hilarious last night. You and I know what a blowout material, blowout package is. I don't think I've ever seen a broadcast have a concussion package ready to go as quickly as Amazon did last night.
Yeah, that was, you know, all kidding aside, we like to keep it light here on this show. That was scary, man. And, you know, I saw earlier this morning on Good Morning Football, Manti Te'o, who has a relationship with Tua, both being from Hawaii. And I don't know if they're, I think they are actually related by blood.
Yeah, I believe that's correct. I remember when Tua was getting recruited, because he looked at Ole Miss for a little bit when I was covering Ole Miss. He came into like a pro day or something. And it was, very quickly when I had Ole Miss people saying, they got a shot, I was like, I talked to the kid. There's no shot. He was very polite, but I do believe that was a storyline that they're related somehow.
Yeah, and you know, he was pretty emotional this morning on that program, and yeah, it's one of those things too where I don't know what we're supposed to do, what they're supposed to do as a league, because you know, concussions happen. It's a violent game. I'm not defending it. You know, if I were Tua, I would probably walk away, but that's easy for me to say. I'm not an elite athlete like Tua Tagovailoa is. And, you know, he was a guy that many people believe could be the MVP of the league this year. He's 26 years old, but this is now three known concussions. Obviously, 2 years ago, it was pretty scary and violent when you think back to the one he sustained where he had to be carted off the field. So look, there's going to be hot takes all over today. I didn't play football at a high level, so I'm not going to pretend to, you know, be saying, hey, he has to give it up, or hey, he needs to, you know, he could get back out there, rub some dirt on it, kid. I mean, look, each person's their own person, man. And you know, if Tua as a dad wants to step away from the game, I'd totally understand it. I'd respect that decision. But if he says, I'm going to clear concussion protocol and I want to be back out there with my team, you know, who are we to say that he shouldn't go back out there? You know, big picture though for him, it's scary, man. I mean, you know, it's three documented. Who knows how many he may have sustained prior to that. So it was a scary, scary thing. And, you know, I don't want to call it ironic, but it is pretty wild to think that who was the person his head hit? None other than DeMar Hamlin, right? I mean, yeah. The weird connection there with DeMar Hamlin, who it's just so great to see that he's the starting safety for the Buffalo Bills right now, just, you know, a year plus removed from essentially dying on the field, and he's back out there. Now, as we learned, Jeffrey, like, DeMar Hamlin's injury was a freak occurrence, right? It caught him as his heart was not beating and it just was a freak occurrence. Like, he has been cleared. He should be fine for the rest of his life. This is a head deal, and this is the third known head situation for Tua moving forward. So who knows how long he'll be out here for the Miami Dolphins, you know, moving forward.
Yeah, I guess the way that I feel about it is, I don't love how immediately, like, we're supposed to have a medical opinion and, like, we're telling him what to do. My whole deal is, as long as he's getting good faith medical advice and, you know, everyone is honest about it, he should be able to make his own choice. What drives me insane is when we sit here and we, like, armchair quarterback. It's like, I don't know. Like, what if he's the type of guy that, and I know at some point he's going to have to come to grips with it, some point football will end. But, I mean, what if he's 26 and, you know, football is such a big part of his life, he wouldn't know what to do with himself without it. Like, I don't. Right. My whole point is, like, we don't, like, we make all these choices as if we're making them for ourselves. I do think the positive thing is that he got his contract and he got paid, so maybe he doesn't feel as forced to go out and play, but I don't know. To me, the other big thing on this, man, is I am so sick of watching quarterbacks that don't know how to slide anymore. Like, I just, and I get it, I played baseball and football, so it's something I just knew how to do. But, I mean, we saw it on Hard Knocks when they did the slip inside and whatnot, but, like, to me, like, this is another big deal. It's like, if you play quarterback in the NFL, you have no excuse for not knowing how to slide. Like, I'm sorry, not playing baseball is not a reason to not know how to slide.
Yeah, I mean, there was, you know, being in D.C. and covering, you know, Washington at the time RG3 was there, it was a massive situation there, too. I mean, he didn't know how to slide properly, and it led to injuries that ultimately derailed his career. There were other things that also derailed his career, but we're not talking about that right now. Yeah, I mean, I have to go back and watch it, Jeffrey, because it was a 4th-and-3. if he had started his slide, the play ends there. So would he have gotten across the line of gain if he had slid? That's what I don't know. I remember it being close, and that's why I think ultimately he did dive forward and ultimately into the chest of DeMar Hamlin. So I need to go back and look, because that's the big thing, too, is when you give yourself up, it's where you are at that point. So would he have gotten the fourth down conversion if he had given himself up and slid?
Yeah, so I'm taking Herb Street's word for it. Herb Street indicated, because I'm with you, it's not where you first hit the ground, it's where you start your slide.
Yeah, I don't think he would have made it. I honestly, I'm watching it right now, and I don't think he would have made it, because he dove ahead and he cleared it by like 2 yards. But remember, you slow your body up, and then you slide, and I'm watching it again, and you know, I'm looking at the yellow line. So it was a 4th and 4. The yellow line was around the 9-yard line, and Tua breaks the pocket. He gets the first. He sees DeMar Hamlin coming over. I think he probably could have, like, you know, jump slid, so to speak, and maybe gotten the first, but man, watching it again, it's just, you know, when he turns over and he's got the, you know, the hands like they are, it is, God, it's scary, man. I mean, I'm happy that he walked off under his own power, but it was, once again, going back to what Manti Te'o said this morning on Good Morning Football on NFL Network, he said, you know, I think it might have been Kyle Brandt, or maybe it was Jamie Erdahl, whoever it was, who said, well, you know, it was good that he walked off under his own power, but Manti Te'o goes, yeah, I don't know this for sure, but there's a good chance he didn't remember walking off the field. He's like, when I got my concussion in the playoffs, he's like, there's video of me walking off the field. He said he didn't remember anything until like the end of the 4th quarter when he came to and he was sitting in the locker room.
Oh, I mean, not to go like hyper dramatic, but I mean, a big story, you know, a few weeks ago, I believe it was in Huntsville, Alabama, guy in a high school game gets hit in the head, walks off, he collapsed and died. I think that's the other thing, though. It's like, we do make a way bigger deal when we see a primetime game, because I keep going back to, we had the massive freak out when he had the one in Cincinnati, also on Thursday Night Football. But I'm telling you, man, the week before, it was a noon game in Miami, and he gets dinged. He clearly gets concussed, and they called it like a back injury. And so, like, I just kind of get frustrated with how we pick and choose. Like, it is a collision sport. I mean, these guys, like, to a certain degree, it's almost like, I'm not really sure football was meant to be played by people this big, this fast, this strong. Like, I don't personally love when we try to, like, morally arbitrate football. Like, no one's holding these guys at gunpoint telling them to play.
Right. Well, I think that's a fair point. And it's a violent game. And, you know, I can't say every player. And look, this is a very serious topic, obviously. And, you know, there are former players who don't want their children playing the sport of football. And that's totally understandable, right? You know, their bodies ache and pain.
Sure.
But there are also former players that have awesome children and offspring who play football, and it ends up being, you know, very important in their lives. So look, I think with everything, you know, to each their own, right? I didn't play football as a
kid. I could not agree more.
I didn't play football as a kid, but I'll be honest, I was, you know, 6'4", 170 pounds. It would not have worked out well for me playing football. I played like 2 years of Pop Warner, and probably my parents were thrilled when I said, yeah, you know what, I'm just going to stick to basketball and baseball, and those would be my two sports. So, yeah, to it comes down to Tua, like, once again, if I were advising him, I'd say, hey, man, you got your guaranteed money, you know, why don't you walk away? But we don't know, like you mentioned, I think it's a really fair point. Like, what would Tua's life be like if he did walk away? Clearly, Andrew Luck was a guy who felt comfortable in his own skin, being like, I'm good, man. I made some money. I think my life outside of football is going to be very, you know, profitable, or, you know, fulfilling, however you want to say. And he walked away. And how many years, Jeffrey, do we say, oh, he's coming back? He didn't, because he was good. You know, he found what he ended up liking.
I found myself wondering, did the Packers call him?
I mean, you know, I mean, how long was it? I mean, Jimmy Irsay, the owner of the Colts, was like, I'm going to pay his contract because you never know. Maybe he'll come back. And he didn't, you know, you know, good for him. It's one of those things where, look, we're fortunate enough to have, in my opinion, the best job in the world, which is doing what we do, what we would be doing with our friends, but instead talking into a microphone or looking into a camera. And I thank my lucky stars that I have this gig every single day, but there are a lot of people who have this gig that feel like it's their obligation to make decisions for other people. I used to always laugh at people who, you know, this is on a much lower level, Jeffrey, but would be like, well, man, he's got to stay in college. He's got to get his degree. I'm like, maybe he doesn't want to go to college. Maybe he wants to go, like, the only reason you care is because he probably plays for your favorite team. You know, as a fan, I want the players on my team, you know, to stick around and go to 57 years of college. But at the end of the day, these young men are probably thinking, hey, man, it sounds pretty cool to be a professional athlete. So I always thought that discussion was bizarre, how we cared so much about what the athlete was going to do for their educational purpose. But if your neighbor dropped out of high school to go work, you know, for, you know, an upstart company, you'd be like, hey, good for you, buddy. Good luck out there.
Yeah, to me, it's the exact same thing. I used to see this a decent amount in recruiting. There was a guy named Terrence Davis who's from about 20 miles south of Memphis. And he was a four-star football player, but he wanted to play basketball. And, you know, the whole time, all the fans are like, why didn't he play football? Why didn't he play football? I'm just sitting there thinking, like, he doesn't want to play football. Like, you know, like, it's the same thing. Like, I get it's a natural reaction, but it's almost like, I always laugh when there's a lot of people that don't like getting hit.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that are asking the question that they didn't like getting hit. Like, why didn't he play football? It's just, and I think the other thing that we always forget, especially at the college level, most of these guys didn't grow up dreaming of being college football players. A lot of them dreamed of being NFL players and whatnot. And it's like, they don't have the same allegiance and whatnot. But it just kind of frustrates me when we act like our decision-making process should be theirs. And I'm just like, I don't think that's fair. We don't have all the information they do.
No, and you're 100% right. So, look, long story short, I hope that Tua is healthy, and if he wants to play again, that would be great because he's a really good quarterback, and I like watching him play on Sundays, and that's selfish of me. But if he decides to walk away, you know, spare me your idiotic social media posts about how he's soft or, you know, whatever it may be. You know, I'm sure Dolphin fans would be disappointed if he said, you know what, that's it, I'm out, you know, this, I can't do this anymore. And I'm sure, you know, as a fan, you're fanatical for a reason, right? But
for sure,
whatever he decides to do, hopefully it's in the best interest of him and his family. And, you know, look, I can't speak to everybody coming from Hawaii, but like, football means a lot out there. And, you know, my guess would be that Tua probably wants to get back on that field, but he's going to have some family members who are, you know, his parents are probably saying, like, look, man, you got $160 million guaranteed. Might want to think long and hard about your life after football, but yeah, we'll see how this all plays out. Can I just, you know, not to make a quick or a massive 180 here. The Bills, everyone kind of wrote off the Bills, huh? How'd that work out?
So I quietly all summer had been high on them. So my wife, she never really had a team, and she just found herself adopting the Bills because, you know, she was a big Pardon My Take fan, and so Josh Allen's obviously a huge part of their show, and so she just found herself liking the Bills. And so in my household, I end up watching more Bills games than I do Giants games because the Giants are so depressing that they're not fun to watch, were bad and boring. I just thought, I'm not saying Stephon Diggs is not a great player, and when you lose a great player that you get better. But what I did think that they were doing by moving on from Diggs was they were putting more on Josh Allen. They were going to beef up the run game. And more importantly, Josh was not going to have to sit there and force feed Stephon Diggs in the red zone. And now it's almost like he gets to throw to whoever's open, because like they're not having to cater to him. And I also think it was a big thing that Sean McDermott gave up the defense again, because I just think when you're the head coach and you're the defensive coordinator, every time a running back fumbles, I think they overreact. And it was so obvious to me the last year plus, James Cook is their best running back. And I do understand he put it on the turf, and I get the whole Parcells, I don't have running backs that fumble because I cut them. But he's clearly their best option. They run the ball so much more effectively. And I know, like, to me, this is kind of, I said it this morning, but I stand by it. I'm not someone that's like, fantasy football has ruined sports watching. But what I do think fantasy has done in terms of consumption of sports is we now put way more emphasis on statistics in evaluating how someone did or didn't play. If you watched the game last night, Josh Allen was really freaking good, but you would go and you'd look at his numbers, and his numbers could not have been more pedestrian.
Yep.
But to me, it's like, I think this makes them a better team.
He did what he had to do. And look, the turning point of that game to me, even though Miami ultimately scored on their next drive, was Sean McDermott on 4th and 3 after getting a turnover saying, we're going for it. And I bet you he would have been crushed if they don't score points there, and you would have had the take the points crowd all over the place. But they called a timeout. Joe Brady designed a beautiful play to get the ball out to James Cook. And to me, that was a massive moment. You took advantage of an early turnover, and instead of 3, you got 7 on the road. And, you know, the Bills took advantage of every interception that Tua ultimately threw, right? They turned the first interception into a touchdown. Later on in the half, they turned it into a field goal, and then they had the pick 6. And also, they turned the turnover on downs into a touchdown as well. The Bills took advantage of everything last night. I mean, it was a really, like, you know, statistically speaking, they got outgained, right? They got outgained by over 100 yards. But what they did in that game to me, which was so impressive, was they took advantage of the mistakes that the Dolphins made. Interception, they turned it into a touchdown when they went for it on 4th down. Interception, they got a field goal. Turnover on downs at midfield, they got another touchdown. And that's what was so impressive to me about the Bills last night. And, you know, Josh Allen's a little bit banged up, right? And normally he probably would have, you know, taken that QB sneak at the 1-yard line. But instead, they were smart about it and gave the ball to James Cook. They opened up a hole, and he ran right into the end zone. Look, much to my chagrin, because I may or may not have bet Josh Allen anytime touchdown, but it was the right move, you know? And that's the thing, too, to your point about fantasy football, where, look, I'm as guilty of it as anybody. I am a bettor. I work for a betting network at VSiN, but the right move at the 1-yard line after converting a massive 3rd down, and what a play that was by Josh to roll out, get extra time, fire a dart. Like you mentioned, he was 13 of 19 last night, but how big was that play? On 3rd and 13, he fires a 30-yard strike down to the 1-yard line. They score on the next play. At the times they needed it, Josh Allen and this team stepped up. And look, they had a poor first half against the Cardinals. They took advantage of it. And now, don't watch out, man. This Buffalo Bills that everyone seemed to write off, the odds makers didn't, by the way. They were still around co-favorites to win this division. They're now 2-0, man. And the schedule is challenging. Jags up next, at Ravens, Texans, Jets. Like, it's a really hard start to the season, but to go to Miami and win by 3 touchdowns, and now you have the rest advantage going into, you know, next Monday night. You know, the Bills are doing some things. It does feel like, as crazy as it sounds, addition, you know, by subtraction with Stephon Diggs a bit.
And again, this is not like a crap on Stephon take, but I think another thing that was impressive about Allen last night, because you're right, that roll, that scramble and the strike that he threw, like, that felt just like a backbreaker. And I think you're 100% right about the 4th down, the 4th and 3, because also they call timeout, as you mentioned. I just assumed at that point, all right, they're kicking it. They wanted to see if they could get the cheap one, the kick it. But no, they got the look they wanted. They drew up a perfect red zone play to Cook. And I think you're right. That was such a huge play in the sense that if the Dolphins hold to a field goal there, it feels like that's kind of a win. But by giving up the back-breaking fourth down and then the touchdown, like, that's so much more deflating. And I am someone that cares about the way, you know, I don't think all touchdowns at all points are the same. I think some hurt more than others, and I think that's a huge part of it. But, like, also back to Allen and without Diggs, if I think back to, like, the Jets game on Monday Night Football last year, Josh threw probably three or four picks, largely because, like, hey, he's trying to force the ball down the field, and that's exactly what the Jets wanted to do, and he's playing into their hands. I just feel like now he's just playing under so much more control. And, yeah, they didn't have a great first half against the Cardinals, but they took the last possession of the first half, and they went down and scored. And really, I think ever since that possession, they played six really good quarters of football, to the point that I know the Chiefs get it, or the Bengals get another shot at the Chiefs on Sunday, but kind of my, like, massive gut overreaction to what we just saw is I'm almost wondering if the Bills are what we kind of thought the Bengals were going to be this year.
Well, I think to the point of Stephon Diggs, and I heard someone say this over the summer, which I think was an astute point, which was, you know, we always talk about winners and losers of trades. I think both teams might end up benefiting greatly from this trade. You know, him going down to Houston, he's an exceptional talent, there's no doubt, but you know, look at week one. Josh Allen connected with nine different receivers.
Yep.
And, you know, the leading receiver in that game was Keon Coleman. Keon Coleman had one target yesterday. And I think with this Buffalo team, they're just going to find the mismatches. And hey, look, if you're a fantasy football owner, it might drive you crazy. To be honest, you know, I have Dalton Kincaid in a keeper league, and I thought he was going to be great this year. He's going to have games. There's no doubt Dalton Kincaid's going to have some big games. But Khalil Shakir was the guy that they saw there were mismatches on in the slot yesterday, and he was 5 of 54 for, you know, a solid day. Nothing great, nothing exceptional. And then, you know, James Cook was effective on the ground. He had that home run after the turnover on downs for 49 yards. It feels like they're going to pick and choose how they go about their ways of winning. At the end of the day, you know, they needed Josh Allen to run a bunch against the Arizona Cardinals. Last night, if you played over his player prop, well, you lost because he only rushed two times for 2 yards. So they're going to pick and choose their spots. And, you know, I do wonder a little bit, Jeffrey, is this the Joe Brady redemption tour? Because Joe Brady, he leads LSU to the national championship as their offensive coordinator in 2019, arguably the best college football team we've ever seen. He gets the job in Carolina with Matt Rhule. He gets fired, I think, either in year one or early year two. He has to go to Buffalo to be their quarterback's coach. And now things have kind of settled down. You know, and it feels like maybe this is the spot he was supposed to be in. He got all this hype after the LSU time. That has kind of dissipated, and he just might be a really good offensive coordinator that he just needed to find his right fit, and Carolina clearly wasn't it with Matt Rhule.
Yeah, I think there's probably something to it, because I was in the camp of, I think Brady got a little too much pub at LSU. Like, I think you and I could have scripted up some pretty good plays for all those weapons. But what we're also seeing is, you know, maybe Carolina's a miserable place, because I think some people kind of also thought maybe Matt Rhule couldn't coach because, you know, he didn't have success at Carolina. And now we're seeing maybe that guy's a pretty darn good football coach. And so I definitely think there's something to it. I also think, though, the setup is perfect for an offensive coordinator, because – I don't think you're having to worry about, we've got to get this guy going, got to get that guy going. Like, in the end, it's like we get to just kind of use what we got. And to me, I think the similarities are there to what the Chiefs did last year.
Well, let's not forget, like, Buffalo got off to a terrible start last year. And they were as hot as any team going into the playoffs a year ago. They won their final five games. They should have beat Philadelphia on the road. They really should have won their final seven consecutive games. So they stunk for a little while. They had some bad losses. They beat your Giants, like, what was that, like 12-6 or something like
that. It was a Sunday night, gross Sunday night game. And they had to, like, I want to say we were up like, they had to score twice, I think, to beat us in the fourth.
Yeah, but they as the year went on, they lost to Denver, but then they figured it out. They crushed the Jets. Like I said, they were up big on the Eagles. That was one of the all-time meltdowns that I had my betting partner text me, hey, at least we got the Bills right, and then they ended up losing in overtime by 3, and I wanted to punch him in the face. But then they won their final 5 games. They crushed Pittsburgh. And they ran into a guy by the name of Mahomes at home. So, like, you know, lots of people lose in that situation. But it felt like we had written their obituary a little bit too quickly. And I'm not trying to overreact here. They don't have a massive playmaker, you know, on offense outside of Josh Allen. But Josh Allen is that guy. And we saw him when he needed to last week against Arizona after a slow start. What did he do? He called his own number. They regained the lead. And they got out of there with a victory. It wasn't the prettiest thing. But guess who didn't get out with a victory in week one? The Cincinnati Bengals at home is a 7.5-point favorite against the New England Patriots. So they got out. They won. And now they're 2-0 heading into this, you know, quasi-bye week. They have to feel pretty darn good about where they are right now through 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, could not agree more. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk some SEC. I'm sorry, Tiger fans. We are, I promise, going to talk about that Florida State game. But that was just on my mind when we had Dolphins Bills. So let's take a break. But let's talk some SEC football. We're going to do that with Blake Topmeyer of USA Today Sports. But before we do that, I want to remind you, program is brought to you by the fine folks at Birdies. It's Memphis's number one spot for indoor golf, 493 South Main Street, Suite 101. 3 golf simulators, virtual putting course, full service bar, great menu, great atmosphere, great vibes. Also, they will be opening at 9 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday. So if you want to go and watch the football there, great TV selection there. Great spot to watch the games. Also, if you want to get your sticks out, play a little simulator golf, you can do so with your game that you want to watch on the simulator with sound. Makes for a great setup. Check out the membership options. $100 a month gets you 10 hours on the simulator. Normally, standard hour rates are $40, so that's a great value. You'll also get discounts and more. Go to golfatbirdies.com to check that out. Also, follow them on Instagram at birdies901. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk some SEC football with Blake Topmeyer. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
Blake, I'm pulling at you right now. I'm headed to Chattanooga to cover the MUS Macaulay School game. So I apologize for having to be on the phone while you're on the phone. But let's talk some SEC. In your mind, what was the biggest story last weekend?
Well, I mean, just the way Texas crushed Michigan, I thought. I mean, twofold. One, Texas crushing Michigan. Two, Notre Dame losing. Now, I know you asked, what was the biggest story to the SEC? But I think Notre Dame losing really impacts the SEC. I think we've talked about this before. If Notre Dame gets in the playoff, you know, that steals an at-large bid, or that claims an at-large bid, and that hurts the SEC's quest to claim five playoff bids, which I think is sort of the unspoken number in mind for the conference. I think they know six is a little bit unrealistic, but I think the league feels like it can get to five. And there were some really nice developments for the conference on that front last weekend. Number one, Texas just blowing Michigan, just totally crushing them. And then two, Notre Dame losing, that helps the SEC. And then three, Iowa loses to Iowa State. I mean, really, you know, week one I thought was kind of middling returns for the SEC. I mean, Georgia crushed Clemson, but otherwise wasn't a great start for the conference. But then week two went about as well as I think the league office could hope for, really.
Blake, for me, one of the most interesting games of the whole weekend is going to be Texas A&M at Florida. I think many of us know the daunting task that is ahead for Florida with this brutal schedule once they get into the month of November, and that doesn't include a game against Tennessee. But they really, Billy Napier wants to keep his job, he has to get on a little bit of a roll here and have, you know, five wins probably by that Georgia game in early November. What do we expect from the quarterback position for Florida? You know, they've been, you know, kind of mum's the word. I know the fan base certainly wants DJ Lagway. Graham Hertz should be back. And then I guess secondly, too, you know, what do we know about Texas A&M? You alluded to the Notre Dame loss. Well, Texas A&M lost to Notre Dame at home, and Notre Dame was actually able to have some success offensively against them, and they weren't able to do so much against NIU. So, you know, from a point spread perspective, it's about 3.5-4 in favor of the Aggies. What do you make of tomorrow afternoon in Gainesville?
Yeah, huge game for Billy Napier, and if he loses while playing Graham Mertz at quarterback, you won't be able to find a Gator fan anywhere who would take up for Billy Napier at that point. You know, as you mentioned, Florida fans they've moved on from Graham Mertz after the season opener against Miami, fairly or unfairly. You know, starting quarterback gets a lot of the blame for performances like that. And you know, Graham Mertz is not the future. DJ Lagway, to the extent that he's going to stay at Florida, we don't know. But if he stays at Florida after this season, he is the future. Whether Billy Napier is a future or not, we don't know. But if Billy Napier has a future, it has to be tied to DJ Lagway. However, Napier seems to be falling into this old trap. Coaches usually just launch themselves into repeatedly, and that's kind of going down the with the ship of a veteran quarterback. And, you know, if you kind of read the tea leaves of Napier's comments this week, it sure seems like, assuming Mertz is cleared out of concussion protocol and gets the green light to play tomorrow, I think Mertz is going to be taking a lot of the snaps with Lagway mixed in, which I just think is a big mistake for Billy Napier, which sort of defines his tenure, if we're being honest. A lot of mistakes in his tenure. I mean, if he's going to have a future, he has to sell it throughout the course of these next six games of, look at what the future looks like with DJ Lagway. Yeah, it's not all there yet, but he's just a true freshman. I got him coming back next season, and you know, this is not the end result, but this is a step in the right direction. That's the narrative he has to sell. He can't sell that narrative if Graham Mertz is on the field. For Texas A&M, you know, I think the takeaway from them from that Notre Dame game is sort of same old story. Like, I think Texas A&M is going to be still limited offensively, and that's been the story in College Station for many years now. Connor Wigman got a lot of preseason buzz. I've always been on the fence as to whether he's you know, the guy to kind of reinvigorate Texas A&M. We didn't see it against Notre Dame, certainly. He was miserable in that game, didn't have a lot of help. They're limited at wide receiver, and I think that is one of the most overlooked positions still in college football, despite the fact that it has become one of the most important positions. And that was something that, for all the preseason buzz around Texas A&M, and I thought, you know, they could be in line for a bounce back season. One of the things that concerned me with the Aggies was I didn't think they had a ton of playmakers on the perimeter, and certainly they didn't against Notre Dame. And I think that could be a season long issue, which will put a ceiling on them. I mean, I think their defense will keep them in games, but I still have concerns about their offensive punch. I don't know that getting rid of Jimbo Fisher changed all that.
We're talking with Blake Topmeyer here on Jeffrey Wright and Company. It's Football Friday. Tim Murray's joining us out in Vegas. I'm on the road to Chattanooga. Also, guys, have y'all seen the internet whispers that maybe Marcel Reed's going to play for A&M? Am I the only one seeing this?
I hadn't seen that, but that doesn't totally surprise me, I guess.
Now, I don't know if it's injury related or whatnot, but like, that line's also been dancing around, so I have no idea. But the other thing I thought that was interesting, I know he has not had the success that Mullen has, but isn't Napier kind of falling into the same trap Mullen did in his last year, in which the fan base obviously wanted Anthony Richardson to play? He was hesitant to play him, and like, in the end, like, I think that was one of the reasons that they got him.
That's a great point, Jeffrey. And I mentioned earlier, like, Napier's falling into this trap. A lot of coaches before him have fallen into of going down with the ship of the veteran quarterback. And you're so right with Mullen. You know, you go back to that season, and Anthony Richardson just had all the potential. And really, there were so many things about Anthony Richardson that made you think, this is a Dan Mullen quarterback. This is a Dak yeah. Prescott type of guy. And it's like, Dan, why are you not playing him? And I think these coaches just think, well, in practice, you know, he can't do all the things that the veteran can do, and he only knows 60% of the playbook. And I think these coaches get inside their own heads sometimes, and they think, well, why would I want to go out there with a guy who can only run 60% of the playbook? Well, I'd rather have the more talented guy running the 60% of the playbook that he knows than the veteran, who we all know what his ceiling is, running the 100%, but you know, it really doesn't matter because he's not as electric as the freshman you got on the bench. That is a great comparison between if Napier does indeed, you know, kind of ride it out with Mertz and give Lagway some spot drives or you know, a series here, a series there. It would be very reminiscent of what Mullen did in that final season, where he had Anthony Richardson. You know, just you could tell this was a guy with NFL talent. He didn't have it all together yet. But I think it could have helped make an argument to keep Mullen's job of, hey, this is the quarterback of the future. This is not the season that Florida wanted. I mean, Mullen would have had an uphill road anyway because of the way he was recruiting and the expectations he'd set for himself the first 3 years at Gainesville. He set the bar too high too fast and it was kind of toppled by his own expectations. However, Napier didn't do that. I mean, Napier just has to show the signs that the future could be brighter. He's got to show progress, and that's not happening. And I don't think, you know, going 5-7 with Graham Mertz is going to be enough to convince the fan base or ultimately his administration who's making a decision that brighter future's ahead. And the other thing is, too, like, you go 5-7 with Graham Mertz, and everybody knows you're a lame duck coach. Who's to say DJ Lagway sticks around anyway? Whereas I think if you give him the reins now, you win a few games in the middle part of this season, and maybe Napier can hang on to his job, then Lagway probably does stick around.
Blake Topmeyer helping us break down a busy weekend ahead for the SEC. College game day will be at an SEC campus, but it was not the one we were anticipating last week. We thought it would be Kentucky, but they laid an egg to the Gamecocks of South Carolina. So there you go, South Carolina. You get college game day. And, you know, this is a spot where you saw South Carolina around a touchdown underdog. You're starting to see a little bit of money come in on the Gamecocks here. Blake, I'm curious your perspective of this LSU team. You know, I bet against them week one. I thought the line was a little too overreactionary. You know, you lost your offensive coordinator, your quarterback who won the Heisman, two first-round picks at wide receiver. Now they've lost their running back in John Emery for the year. You know, what do we expect from LSU tomorrow in what will be, it's an early start, but no doubt a hostile environment there in Columbia?
Yeah, last I saw the forecast, there was a lot of rain in Saturday's forecast for Columbia, South Carolina. I haven't peeked at that in the last handful of hours, but with the hurricane passing through the Gulf and now sending rain showers out throughout the southeast, if that indeed becomes the forecast on Saturday, I think that helps South Carolina's upset chances. I think a sloppy game, you know, where maybe it's a little harder on quarterbacks, that's perfect for South Carolina because, you know, to the extent LSU is going to become a high-achieving team this year, it all goes through Garrett Nussmeier. The limitations at running back are obvious, particularly with the injury. You referenced to John Emery, who had been the best running back in that Southern Cal game. Now he's done for the season. You know, the defense, I think, is going to be better than last year. We've seen a little bit of early signs of that, but it's still not going to be enough to carry the team. Garrett Nussmeier is going to have to be the guy to carry LSU, and he's going to have to do it without those two star wide receivers from last year. But I still think, you know, a lot of talent in Nussmeier, a lot of talent at the wide receiver position for LSU. That's their strength, is quarterback and wide receiver. So, you know, if this does become a sloppy game, that can be the bit of the equalizer. And that's the way South Carolina needs to win. You know, through the first couple weeks, South Carolina's done some impressive things on defense. I think they're second in the conference in tackles for loss. Obviously, competition gets better. I mean, they played Old Dominion and Kentucky so far, but I'm not sold on Sellers, the South Carolina quarterback, just because he had a little bit of a better game against Kentucky. I think the hype train there is really kind of off the rails based on one blowout win over Kentucky. Nonetheless, like I said, the defense does seem to be solid for South Carolina, and you know, if some conditions contribute to a low-scoring game, could be a battle. And the other thing is, too, it's a little more hostile at night, but Williams-Rice Stadium is one of the more underrated venues in the SEC. If you look at South Carolina's road record over the past decade compared to the home record, it's one of the biggest splits in the SEC over the last 10-plus years. They are substantially better at home than they are on the road. Now, that comes with a caveat. Sometimes some teams like Georgia, they're great at home or on the road. But South Carolina is one of those teams that if they got to go on the road to play you, I know it wasn't the case last week at Kentucky, but for the most part, they're not a strong road team, but they are dangerous at Williams-Rice Stadium. So, yeah, tricky line here. I would, if it's over 7, I kind of like South Carolina in the points, but I know the line's been moving around. I think I've seen some places got it at 6.5 now.
Speaking of sloppy quarterback play, what do you make of what's going on down in the Plains?
I think that it is shown that if you think you need a new quarterback at the end of the previous season, you probably do, in fact, need a new quarterback. Now, I mean, Hugh Freeze was all over the map last winter as to whether they needed a new quarterback or they didn't. You know, he said around signing day, no, don't need a new quarterback. We're going to stick with the incumbents. Then the bowl game was a disaster offensively, and he was like, maybe we do need a new quarterback. But he didn't land one. And despite the upgrades at some other positions, it still comes back to, if you don't have a quarterback, there's a ceiling on your team. Now I'm surprised they lost to Cal. I thought Auburn would beat Cal. I thought this would be like an 8-4 type of Auburn team because they got a lot of talent on defense, as Auburn always does. But when your quarterback goes out and throws four interceptions and can't really stretch the field, and he sees receivers about 3/4 of a second too late, you're really hamstrung offensively, and it's not a good excuse for a year or two coach to think like, well, I just haven't developed a quarterback yet. Like, no, anymore. You go out and bid on these guys and you try to make the best evaluations possible and hope you hit. And I think Hugh Freeze would be forgiven a little bit more if he brought someone in who people thought would be a hit. And it just didn't work out. But the fact that he doubled down on Peyton Thorne, the die is cast on this guy. Like, Peyton Thorne, we know who he is. He's probably good enough for Auburn to win 6-7 games. But there's such a clear ceiling with him. And that was brought out once again on Saturday. And what was really rich about it was Hugh in his press conference, I believe it was Monday, saying the coaching staff called a great game. And there were guys running free in the secondary, he said, and our quarterback just missed him. And he was right. There were guys running free in the Cal secondary, and Peyton Thorne did miss him or just flat out didn't see him too many times. But guess what? A coach's job is not just to call plays. A coach's job is to assemble the talent and to develop the guys to where they can make the plays. I mean, if the job was just calling plays, there's a lot of guys at home playing Madden that could probably be an asset on the sidelines on fall Saturdays. And so, you know, anymore, it being a college coach, it is so much more than X's and O's, so much player development and evaluation and being able to get guys like a general manager and hitting and not missing like we've seen Lane Kiffin consistently do. It's not just that Lane takes a bunch of transfers. It's that he doesn't miss on these guys that often. And for Auburn, not only to – I mean, this isn't a case of a miss. It's a case of they didn't bring anybody in. And, you know, I think it's really going to hamper them, and it's going to create probably a middling season that's going to put a lot of pressure on Hugh Freeze in year three.
Blake Tottmeyer joining us here on the show. Tennessee, I like to look at letdown spots, Blake, across college football. We saw them quite evident last week when Notre Dame off the Texas A&M game loses to Northern Illinois. Penn State labors with Bowling Green. Not sure that's going to be the case here with Tennessee this weekend. Night game, they're laying 7 touchdowns right now against Kent State. The Golden Flash is one of the worst teams in college football. But big picture, man, what was your takeaway from the dismantling of NC State? I don't think enough people, at least nationwide, have given this Tennessee team enough credit. I mean, this team, in my opinion, has been one of the most impressive teams so far at the start of the year.
Yeah, I mean, they made a statement win on Saturday for sure. I'm curious to see how good NC State will be when it's all said and done. That'll probably be about a 7-5 type of team. But nonetheless, even if you're beating a 7-5 ACC team 51-10, you know, that sends a signal. And I'm not surprised by the offense. I'm not surprised by Nico. And interestingly, they scored 51 points despite Nico being at about his B-minus game, not his A game. I mean, he threw a couple picks. He was still good, but Nico can play better than he played on Saturday and will play better than he played on Saturday. And nonetheless, they scored 51 points. I mean, this offense is going to be great. We kind of knew that. They got a good run game that sometimes gets overlooked nationally about Josh Heupel's systems. It really is a run-first system. Quarterback makes a lot of big plays in that system, but he's always going to have a ground game. He's got it this year. I don't have any questions about that offense. I did have questions about the secondary, and they answered the bell on Saturday for sure. Now, I am curious what it's going to look like against some of the tougher SEC opponents on their schedule. However, Tennessee's got a great draw when it comes to its conference schedule. Yes, they have to play Georgia and Alabama, but and they got a road trip to Oklahoma. But they need to win at least one of those three, and otherwise I think they're in great shape. There's just not – they didn't draw a lot of the better quarterbacks in this conference in their schedule draw, and I think that works great for them because they're – I still think the one area of concern with Tennessee is the secondary. I know they played well on Saturday. I still think that group would struggle against a top-end quarterback. However, the defensive front of Tennessee is really nasty. I thought it was going to be.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.